Hello and welcome to Star Diary, the podcast from the makers of BBC Sky at Night magazine. You can subscribe to the print edition of the magazine by visiting skyatnightmagazine.com or to our digital edition by visiting iTunes or Google Play.
Greetings, listeners, and welcome to Star Diary, a weekly guide to the best things to see in the Northern Hemisphere's night sky. As we are based here in the UK, all times are in BST. In this week's episode, we'll be covering the coming week from the 24th to the 30th of April. I'm Ezzy Pearson, the magazine's features editor, and I'm very glad to be able to welcome back to the show our reviews editor, Paul Money. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Ezzy. Glad to be back.
It's absolutely great to have you back again. It's been a while. But this week, we're looking up at the night sky. Can you tell us what we have to look forward to?
Well, a lot of attention has been in the evening twilight, and that continues because Venus absolutely dominates, doesn't it? I mean, it's so bright. I mean, it's the first thing you near enough see as the sky starts to darken. But it's got Mars up there as well. But on the 24th, we've actually got three planetary bodies. Actually, technically, we ought to say four because you can see the Earth's horizon. We've got Venus, but we've got the crescent moon as well. It's a rather thick crescent moon. And we've got Mars as well. So, and if you've got dark skies, it's something I don't really have a good sight for it because my western horizon has lots of buildings and light pollution. But if you've got a nice horizon, you might still get the zodiacal light as well, sort of thing. So that's worth looking out for at the moment, especially as it extends through the Pleiades, because the Pleiades star cluster, we're in the last stages. We'll lose it shortly after this. So this is your last chance, really, I think, to get the Pleiades. And they are actually, it forms a line with, it goes the Pleiades, M45, Venus, crescent moon, and Mars. So you've actually got quite a lineup then. If you have the zodiacal lighting, gosh, we've got a lot going on in the evening sky.
For those of you who don't know, the zodiacal light is the light from, I believe, the solar system. It's dust within the solar system that gets reflected sunlight, and you can sometimes see it shooting up over the horizon. It does, I believe, you need quite a dark sky to be able to see it. But if you are out in the dark anyway, keep an eye out. You might be able to catch it.
Yes, it's a cone of light, and it follows the ecliptic, which is why we know it's the fine dust in the inner solar system scattering the light. So I've only seen it a few times, to be fair, and you have to get away from light pollution. There's no doubt about it. First time I ever thought I saw it, I was actually looking towards Horncastle, and it was the light pollution from Horncastle. So it's just one of those things in it. So, yeah, good dark horizon, so there's nothing in the way, no light pollution to fool you as such. But it does follow the ecliptics, and that's part of the clue. So, yeah, we've got sort of Venus, the moon, we've got Mars, we've got the Pleiades as well, all in the evening sky. I'm looking around about 9:30, sort of thing. Start to leave it any later and you'll start to lose the Pleiades, but of course the sky will get darker as well. But the moon is interesting because you've actually got the moon sort of like as a quite a thick crescent. And I was looking at that and I was thinking, well, actually, it's halfway between new and half phase. So surely we should be calling it quarter phase moon. Just to confuse us, sort of thing, with the normal quarter moon, sort of thing, which is, of course, quarter way around the orbit.
Yeah. I am quite glad that they haven't gone for that naming convention, because astronomers, they don't always give things the best names. For instance, the quarter moon is when it's half full. Yes. And then I think having another thing where it's the quarter phase would be even more confusing, and I don't think I can handle that.
Yes, I better not encourage that to get started. But it does mean we get a good view of the Mare Crisium, the Sea of Crises, actually on the moon. And it always tickles me. So Mare Tranquility is just coming into view as well. And Fecunditatis is well displayed. It's both it and Crisium are really well displayed. But it always tickles me that there's a crater called Picard in Mare Crisium. And it's actually quite well seen. You know, it's quite an easy one to see. But it's not that Picard. It's not Jean-Luc Picard from a certain TV franchise. But it is Jean Picard. And he was actually a French astronomer and geodesist in the Paris Observatory in the 17th century. So, I have to look up geodesist sort of thing. But it's somebody who measures the Earth sort of thing, from observations and gets her positions and coordinates from that. So I thought that was quite fascinating. But it's a nice crater. So you've got this huge great mare sort of thing, but you've also got this nice crater in it. There are other craters as well. We should say there are other craters in Mare Crisium and on the moon. But it's worth having a look at because this one stands out at this particular phase. You've got some nice shadows forming from it as well. So that's the moon then. Now, that's on the 24th. So, you know, quite a lot happening on the 24th, isn't it, to get started. On the 25th and 26th, what we find is the moon's up. We always follow the moon, don't we? Because the moon, you know, that's where we get month from. It goes round us. So every month we're going to have events featuring the moon. And this is no exception because on the 25th and 26th, on the 25th, it's to the right of Mars. So you shouldn't have trouble identifying Mars really, but it is fading now. So it is beginning to look more like some of the regular stars around it. The only difference is that it is slightly orangish, but Betelgeuse is still up. So you've got the two to compare them. But to give you a guide to it, you've got the moon on the 25th to its right, and it's still quite a thick crescent as well. So you'll be able to pick out Mars, but telescopically it's quite small now. I tried imaging it just the other week and it was so tiny and whatnot. I just thought it's a blob.
Sometimes the planets are just blobs in the night sky. But that doesn't mean you can't, you know, try and pick them out with the naked eye and have a good look at them.
Exactly. I mean, the fact that it shows a disc, there is a disc there, shows you haven't got a star that's out of focus. You've got an actual disc itself. So that was good. So the 26th, though, the next night, the moon is trying to form a bit of a lineup with Castor and Pollux in Gemini. So it's a slightly curved line. And I always think it's a bit of a triangle also with Kappa from Pollux and Kappa Geminorum as well. So as it happens, with Mars going through the center of Gemini at this particular time, on the 25th, it should be noted, it's right next to 48 Geminorum. So it's got a star right next to it. Now, Mars is magnitude 1.3. The star is a lot fainter. It's magnitude 5.8. So there's quite a difference there. So you can't confuse them. And there'll be a colour difference as well. And you can see this easily with the binoculars. You know, technically, it's a naked eye star as well, 5.8 magnitude. But, you know, but again, you don't want to have much light pollution. And you've also got natural light pollution because we've got the moon coming in, haven't we? Growing in phase sort of thing. So that's always a, I mean, you either love the moon or you hate it. You know, you hate it if you're a deep sky observer sort of thing, you know, or you love it if you're a lunar observer. I tend to fall between the two a little bit, but I must admit I am more of a deep sky observer myself sort of thing.
I think you just have to learn to flip-flop throughout the month, you know. 2 weeks, you're a lunar observer, and then 1 week, you're a deep sky observer. And that's how you're going to go through. I think that's probably a good approach to take.
It is.
Might require getting some different equipment to use throughout the month, but...
Well, funny enough, I was going to mention that because, you know, if you're an astro imager, once upon a time, when the moon was up, that was it. You stopped. But now we've got so many different filters that can cut through the moonlight, you know, especially the mission line ones sort of thing, you know, oxygen and silicon, things like that. Astro images now can near enough image throughout the entire month without worrying about the moon. And I think that is absolutely amazing. But it does mean, when do you sleep? During the day, hang on, you could be a solar observer. And of course, the sun is actually getting quite active. So, you know, I mean, we have had some recent auroras during March. And, you know, aurora season isn't quite, in fact, I've seen aurora in July. You know, I mean, I've only seen it twice. But, you know, if it's a really good storm, you can actually have the aurora during the summer months as well. So, you know, always keep a lookout. You never know if there's a big storm. We are, they think now there's a prediction that the solar cycle might peak towards the end of 2023, 2024. So that'll be exciting. So, you know, we might still have some aurora. So it's worth keeping a lookout just in case. Never say it's just a season sort of lingering, you know, just lingering around sort of March and April. You know, worth thinking about it for the rest of the year as well.
I was going to say, if there is anybody out there who is thinking about possibly doing some aurora hunting, you might want to move your plans up a bit if you are planning on going next year or the year after. People think the peak might happen this year. It might just be that we're in a really active solar cycle and it'll keep going on. If you haven't planned that once in a lifetime trip, which I've managed to go aurora hunting and had success, and I really do recommend it if you can.
It is. I mean, it is a sight to behold. I must admit, sort of thing. I have a toss-up between the aurora and noctilucent clouds. When it's aurora scene, I'm really excited to get a bright aurora. And of course, unfortunately, I was ill and we had cloud when we had the really bright one in March. Isn't that typical?
Yeah.
Isn't that typical? I can't complain because I did do the Northern Lights flights for many years sort of thing. So I got some absolutely humdinger of some displays. But I have seen some great ones from the ground as well. But I have to say sort of thing, now we're heading, when we get into the summer, my allegiances switch. And I start saying, oh yeah, noctilucent clouds, they're brilliant, you know. And then when that season finishes and we get the aurora and get a good aurora, oh yeah, well, aurora for me. So I'm definitely a flip-flopper, aren't I?
Yeah. And if you are interested in finding out a bit more about noctilucent clouds, then I suggest you pick up the May copy of BBC Sky at Night magazine, where we have a feature all about it in there. And also, if you are interested in hunting aurora or noctilucent clouds, then go to our website, skyatnightmagazine.com. We have lots of guides on there. I'll put a couple in the show notes below as well.
Exactly. We cover it every year sort of thing because they're just such an amazing experience to see them. And I do know people have gone to Iceland and Norway to see them and been clouded out. and I know that really big one. So there was some friends of mine had gone to Norway and didn't get anything and were rather cheesed off, shall we say, to find out we'd had a great display in the UK. Yes, it's an ironic twist, isn't it, sort of thing. So you can be up there and actually miss them because the auroral oval has moved south and whatnot. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to see it in the UK. But, you know, it's just one of those things, you know. I mean, you have to take it in and leave it. Anyhow, continuing, we're looking to the next night, April 27th. We're following the moon now. We're not quite at half phase. It's just about, it's borderline. You know, catching it directly at half phase is a bit of an art because sometimes it can occur when the moon's below the horizon for us. But it'll be directly above the beehive cluster. This is Messier 44 in Cancer. So the half phase moon. Now, the light from the moon will diminish some of the cluster members. You've got to bear that in mind. And then on the 28th, we switch. I know it's the morning sky. I know it's 4:30 in the morning, but Saturn is getting back into the sky. Now, you do need a good, uncluttered sort of east-southeast horizon, to be fair, which is that I have a disadvantage there. I have an industrial estate and a big, we call it a bund. It's a big sort of a mound that hides us from the industrial estate and got lots of shrubs all over it. Trouble is, as those have grown up, it's hidden more and more of that horizon for me,
yeah,
which is a great shame. But Saturn is now emerging back into view, so you'll be able to check out the rings. So you have to look at around about 4:30 in the morning. So, you know, if you're an early morning riser, you know, a lot of people are. They've got work in the morning sort of thing very early. So look out for that. I say in the east, southeast sort of thing. So now that Saturn's creeping out of the glare of the sun. So that was on the 28th sort of thing. And from then on, really, sort of thing with Saturn. But on the 29th, the moon continues in its journey around and it's directly above and forms a bit of a triangle with Regulus and Eta Leonis as well. So, but I always find sort of thing, it's also almost on a line. It's a bit of a curve with Algebra and Regulus as well. So Regulus and Algebra are both double stars. So this is a time when you can use the moon to guide you on to double stars aren't spoilt by the moonlight. That's the good thing about them. Whereas deep sky objects like galaxies and nebulae are swamped by the moonlight, but double stars are all right. So here we are. So Gamma Leonis Algebra on close inspection is a closer double with two yellow orange stars, one slightly brighter than the other, one at magnitude 2.2 and one at 3.6 magnitude as well. So, you know, this is a nice time to catch up on these double stars when the moon is actually quite close to them. And then to finish off this week, certainly from my part, we've got to Iris, 7 Iris. It is an asteroid. It is actually quite faint, but it reaches opposition on the 30th of April. It'll be low down. It's just on the border of Virgo and Libra. But because it's reaches opposition, it's now visible technically all night because it rises as the sun sets and sets as the sun rises. But it is faint. It's magnitude 9.6. So I would allow at least wait until about 11 o'clock onwards. Let it get well above the horizon before you try. But you will need, I think, in this case, a telescope to actually hunt it down. So that'll give you another planetary body to find because We have got a scarcity of planets at the moment. We've really only got Venus and Mars in the evening sky, Saturn in the morning, and then this very meagre minor planet coming to opposition. We'll have to wait a few weeks, but we will have some come back. Sadly, we've lost Mercury, of course. We've just lost Mercury. Oh, we've just lost it. It's just one of those things, but it will be back at some stage.
It does sort of feel like Venus is doing all of the work at the moment. You know, okay. Venus, it's a bright, I think it's about -4 this week. It's around about that point. And, you know, very much the brightest thing in the night sky after the moon. And then there might be some other ones, maybe.
Yeah, it's almost like it's screaming out, look at me, look at me. Don't look at anybody else. Look at me. But it is, I mean, that's why it's got the morning and evening star moniker. And of course, at the moment, it's the evening star. So it dominates in the night sky. And it's the first thing people see as soon as the sky gets dark. So, trouble is, it's always a bit featureless that you have to really look carefully and have specialized filters to really bring out the subtle clouds actually on Venus sort of thing. But I like just looking at the crescent. I look at the phase, you know, sort of thing. It's a gibbous phase at the moment, but it will eventually, later in the summer, turn into a quite a large crescent.
So to summarise what you can see this week, we start off on the 24th of April, where Venus, Mars, the Moon and the Pleiades will all be lined up on the night sky. Then on the 25th and the 26th, Mars will be in Gemini. The 27th, the Moon will be near to the Beehive Cluster. On the 28th, Saturn will be making its way into the morning sky. The 29th is a great chance to see some double stars in Leo. And finally, finishing up the week on the 30th is the opposition of the minor planet Iris. So there certainly sounds like there is a lot of things to see throughout the week. If you'd like to find out what's going to be in the night sky next week and all the weeks after, do be sure to subscribe to the podcast. And thank you very much, Paul, for taking us through all of that.
It's a pleasure. Look forward to doing next week.
And we hope to see you here next week as well. Goodbye.
If you want to find out even more spectacular sights that will be gracing the night sky throughout the month, be sure to pick up a copy of BBC Sky at Night magazine, where we have a 16-page pull-out sky guide with a full overview of everything worth looking up for. Whether you like to look at the moon, the planets, or the deep sky, whether you use binoculars, telescopes, or neither, our sky guide has got you covered, with the detailed star charts to help you track your way across the night sky. From all of us here at BBC Sky at Night magazine, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Star Diary podcast from the makers of BBC Sky at Night magazine. For more of our podcasts, visit our website at skyatnightmagazine.com or head to Acast, iTunes, or Spotify.